The ones that don't have it right now and that we think should be getting TPS include Cameroon, which, as you know, and you've reported on, Amy, is in the middle of basically a civil war. Mauritania, where you have enslavement happening right now, in the ways that it has happened, you know, continuously, really, for hundreds of years now.
We have 10 seconds.
Vincent and Grenadines, at Bahamas, Guinea, Sierra Leone, are also countries that we believe should be getting TPS.
And do you believe that Black immigrants are cracked down harder at the border?
Absolutely. When you look at the expulsions, it's clear. As you pointed out in your opening, more Haitians have been expelled under the Biden administration, but it's not just Haitians. It is people from all over the continent of Africa, as well as the Caribbean.
Nana Gyamfi, we want to thank you so much for being with us, Executive Director of the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, an issue we will certainly continue to cover. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. It's Monday. Stay tuned for more talk radio. In the meantime, KBOO Community Radio would like to thank Yuki, Mark, Hamid, Malia, and an anonymous friend for all contributing to our spring membership, Growing the Grassroots Spring Drive. We had a goal of 60,000 and came very, very, very close. You can still contribute financially to KBOO at kboo.fm/give. Easy, secure, safe and convenient web form there to help you through the process. Meanwhile, here's a bit more of what we're asking you to support. Stay tuned for more talk radio on your community connection, KBOO Portland.
Sing solo, yeah. Good morning, and welcome to another Monday here in the KBOO listening area, which would mean that you are either tuned in at 90.7 here in the Portland metropolitan area, 91.9, which would put you somewhere around the Columbia River Gorge, perhaps in Hood River, or White Salmon, Washington. In Philomath, Oregon, point south along the Willamette River Valley, it's 104.3, and in the ether, kboo.fm. Good morning. How you doing, Cecil?
I am well. How are you today, Celeste?
I am jubilant that we made it very close to our $60,000 goal for our spring fundraiser. That money is going to be well spent, keeping KBU strong on the air, keeping the community connected. And, you know, that makes me kind of tickled, especially since for the past little over a year and a half, I have been one of the co-managers along with Jenna Yokoyama. We've been trying to hold down the fort here and make things happen and keep things happening, I should say.
Yeah.
But, you know, other than that, I'm still good, even though it's cloudy.
Well, you know, it's because of so many people who continue to support community radio that it makes it possible. And so thank you all for keeping us keeping on and making it possible as we move on in these crazy times, move forward, because all of us depend on one another. So thank you for your support, and thank you for continuing to do what is right to make sure that community remains together, connected, and the ability to share news and all that is happening is a reality.
Indeed, indeed. Now, so, you know, it's a good thing that we got the good stuff out of the way before we we launched into our topic, because our topic, in a sense, is not as positive. Well, it's positive, but it's not as joyful, I guess I should say. And I'm gonna let you take over, since this one is yours. I don't want to do the wrong lead in, so to speak.
Well, there's never a wrong lead in. It's always good. This week is the anniversary of the lynching of Mr. Floyd in Minneapolis, and many people in our town and indeed throughout the nations are remembering that tragic event. And as we all know, that our nation has been transformed in the reckoning for racial justice this past year. We have become a different place, a different nation, as people and communities have marched and protested and called for reform, abolition, reimagining of policing in our society, and calling for equal, fair racial justice for all. And it's also the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa race massacre that you may be familiar with. 100 years ago, May 31st and June 1st, white supremacist mob backed by government and military stormed through the Greenwood section of Tulsa, demolishing a thriving black business community that Booker T. Washington called the Black Wall Street, because of the numerous black-owned businesses in that area. And it was something that was horrible. And this past week, some of the survivors testified before Congress. And that's incredible, because Viola Fletcher, survivor, is 107 years old. She told the people people, the congressional representatives, I still see black men being shot, black bodies lying in the street. I still smell smoke and see fire. I still see black businesses being burned. I still hear airplanes flying overhead. I hear the screams. I have lived through the massacre every day. I'm 106 years old. Leslie Benningfield Randall said, "You can help us get some justice." America is still full of examples of people in position of power, many just like you, telling us to wait. Others have told us it's too late. It seems like justice in America is always so slow or not possible for black people. And we are made to feel crazy just for asking for things to be made right. There are always so many excuses for why justice is so slow or never happens at all. I am here today, 106 years old, looking at you all in the eye. We've waited 100 years. We have waited too long, and I am tired. We are tired. Ms. Randall gave words to the feeling of many people who continue to strive for a measure of justice. And so, as part of our conversation today, we would like people to reflect about the past year. What have you learned? Where are we headed? And what do you see as the future of our nation? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. A few weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago, a police officer who killed Mr. Floyd was convicted of his horrible crime. And for what I think too many people sort of celebrated that small measure of justice as if things would be all right. Well, Ms. Fletcher and Ms. Randall reminds us that things aren't all right. And as Ms. Randall said, we've waited 100 years. We have waited too long, and I am tired. We are tired. Give us your call, 503-231-8187. Celeste, you are from the Midwest.
Indeed.
Did you ever hear, I was hearing some reports about how people who grew up in Tulsa did not hear about this Tulsa race massacre when they were growing up. What can you say about growing up in the Midwest, and how did people bury these racial atrocities? And where are we today as a nation, 1 year after Mr. Floyd's death 100 years after the Tulsa race massacre.
Well, growing up in, I was born in a small town in Indiana, spent the first years there, and then moved to St. Louis. And so from the age of 4 until 24, I lived in St. Louis, even though I traveled around the country a lot and in the Midwest. I did not know about the Tulsa massacre until I was an adult. And it's not as though my folks kept things from me. Though, you know, when you're the parents of a black child, especially any child of color, but especially black children here in America, you have to indoctrinate your kids early to the dangers of being black in this racist country, because you could get killed easily. And so you grow up with a certain amount of anxiety about telling your kids things, you know, and the kids grow up with a certain amount of anxiety because they, to a degree, have childhood snatched from them, because they have to be aware of, you know, that the whimsies of white adults were dangerous, you know. And so I, on one hand, I'm okay that they didn't tell me about it, because I knew enough danger. You know, I was anxious enough as a child. And so I do not fault my parents for not telling me about it. I didn't expect public school to tell me about it. And I'm really surprised that I learned as much about black history as I did as a youngster. When I was in what we call grade school back then, elementary school, the city of St. Louis trotted out a curriculum and a series of textbooks that did teach black history. And I'm like still in shock, because even to this day, you know, as much as we know, the books are less accurate and less likely to be published and used widely like that without some interesting twists that are not necessarily true. Like, teachers nowadays will teach that there were benefits to black Americans in slavery and try to teach the kids how to embrace that, you know. Yeah, I know. But to get back to your question, I didn't know about the Tulsa massacre. I did learn about Juneteenth vaguely. So as you can imagine, in America, unless you were in close proximity to an event, in either location, you know, physical proximity, or in time, you may not know about it for various reasons, you know, some that I just explained. So, you know, I'm kind of saddened that we don't recognize these atrocities and use them as stepping stones to a better future and build a better society. But at the same time, I'm not surprised that we don't know about it. Case in point, when the movie Rosewood was made, which starred Ving Rhames and a few other people, which chronicled a fictitious town being destroyed, that was mind-boggling itself, because it was based on truth. And so even though a lot of black Americans had grown up hearing about issues like Juneteenth and Tulsa massacre, and then in my family, we also recognized the Trail of Tears, because, you know, as I said, I'm Native American too. It was one of those things where you felt like you were born with a target on your back. And so, you know, again, you were surprised that people didn't care. If, you know, so I don't know. I have so much mixed feelings. That brings up so many pointy things. You know, you can only stare horror in the face for so long, and you must look away to preserve your humanity and to not let your soul be seared by it, so that you can remain compassionate and able to feel empathy. So, yeah. Now, that's for victims. For people who are perpetrators, they're too busy looking at what they've done. They don't care. So I would say the way in which it maybe has changed society is that for a year, this country has really looked at this atrocity incredibly long and has made some important changes. Not enough, because like the massacre, the Tulsa massacre survivor said, you know, I'm still waiting and I'm still tired. You know, so we made some changes, just not enough. And one reason I think is because the deeds done are so horrific that it will take a while to dig them out of our soul.
Yes, yes, indeed. And the fact that I want to protect our children, as you said, in terms of those who have been victims, or because we want to ignore the horrors of what we've done, the history is not shared. And as you just said, for this past year, we have not been able to avoid addressing these issues. And whether or not we will continue to face these issues or move on remains a challenge. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Seven. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I had one of those. Whoa. Give us a call. And you mentioned Celeste, growing up, you know, learned much about Juneteenth and also about indigenous people's history. And, you know, maybe one of the small steps we've made in this state is that in this legislature, sessions, the Oregon legislature officially recognized Indigenous People Day, October 11th, and Juneteenth. So they will officially be celebrated by the state of Oregon. Now, people have been doing this in communities, but now it will be an official. Those will be official state holidays.
And what days will they be on again?
Juneteenth, June 19th, and Indigenous People Day, October 11th, which, you know, some people are born around that date, but also it has been traditionally celebrated as Columbus Day, talking about how history is mistaught. But, you know, we won't sing in 1492, some horrible man came across the ocean blue, and, well, you know the rest.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny that it's October 11th. As a child, I always wanted my birthday to be a holiday, and I guess it's because I was born, you know, on October 11th. And, you know, so I pretended that that was my holiday until I really learned more about who, you know, Columbus was and what, more importantly, what he represented, the machinery he represented. But to hear now, I'm an adult, and I got two holidays on my birthday, and it's like, wow. I guess I hit the trifecta. No, I need one more for the trifecta. No, I got a trifecta. Got a brother born on my birthday, so that's a holiday too. That's the trifecta.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Anyway, we want to invite your phone calls. You know, we want to talk about the positive things we've learned. Now, I imagine for much of white society, American society, it must be difficult to hear how deep the roots of hostility and racism go here in this country. and to see people of color railing against it so much. And, you know, for many conservative political people's response, they go in the opposite direction, and they call it revisionist history, or say that, you know, we are focusing too much on the wrong things. And I'm saying that as lightly as I possibly can. But, you know, most of America has to face the fact that this country was not built on the principles of freedom exclusively. It was built on the principles, let's get somebody to beat up and do our dirty work and treat as a subhuman so we can get ahead. Because we would not be the world power we are without having subjugated folks. And if you look at the world powers, that's exactly what they've done. They subjugated either their own people or they brought somebody else over to do their dirty work for them. And so, you know, it must be hard to hear people talking about this, but it's so important to talk about this because, you know, it's kind of like Langston Hughes's poem. There's a line out of Raisin in the Sun. It's what happens to a raisin, and you know, left in the sun. You know, he asked, "Does it fester?" And that's what will happen if we don't address these ills and cleanse them. What changes have you seen made that make a difference? We don't see Uncle Ben on the package anymore. We don't see Aunt Jemima on the package anymore. We hear talk about putting, you know, putting Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. But those are cosmetic changes. We need something tangible to see. We need an idea of what public safety looks like when everybody is treated with respect. And everybody's safety is important. We need to know what laws look like that don't make it difficult for people to vote and be have proper enfranchisement. We need to know what it's like for people to be able to get a job or to not work a dangerous job without being called welfare kings and queens because they would rather get unemployment than work a dangerous job. So, I mean, maybe there's been some changes, but what do you see? And the phone number, as Cecil said, is 503-231-8187. While we're waiting for calls, one of the things I found really interesting is that in two blockbuster shows the past couple of years, the Tulsa massacres were featured. And yeah. I don't know if you saw Watchmen, you know, that special, or Lovecraft Country. And in both of those shows that feature a kind of science fiction element, the trials and tribulations of black folk were featured prominently in these shows. And the frightening thing about The Watchmen is I saw this. It had already been made, but I didn't see it until the George Foreman lynching. Wow. And it had this weird psychological effect on me. It's like, you know, it was like opening some level of awareness, and I knew about it because, as I said, you know, I mentioned the movie Rosewood. You know, I knew about it, but like I said before, there's only so much horror you can handle. But when I saw it on the TV show, it's like it was happening at the very same time all of the protests were happening about George Floyd, and it was just such a bizarre juxtapositioning of events from past and present with the same fear and ferocity. So, you know, it made me realize that one thing has changed is that in this country is that with regard to our art and entertainment, we are trying to look in that abyss. It may be a measured look, but we're looking, you know.
Right.
And it was the same thing in Lovecraft Country.
It's interesting in terms of popular culture that for many people, their first introduction to the horrors of Tulsa was the witchcraft movie or TV series, and it was a reflection of not only our past, but also for many people, what was going on, what is going on in our nation today. And so it's not surprising that during the year of racial justice reckoning and uprising, popular culture and music and in the arts, in theater and movie, these themes are being addressed in many different ways, and new voices are rising and proclaiming the truth that they live and the truth that they see. You mentioned, you know, some of the artificial cosmetic changes, but some of the substantive changes has been the real debate and struggle in state legislatures and also in county and city governments about how to reimagine public safety. And here in the city of Portland, Oregon, this has been an ongoing debate within City Hall, among the commissioners, and it's interesting in terms of how the commissioners view public safety and what is the proper role of policing, what type of policing. And a question I would ask related to it is, after the initial push that I felt that in last summer here in the city of Portland and within City Hall, I said, oh, there might be some serious reimagining of public safety and serious cut in the police budget. But it did not, the city government commissioners have failed to go as far as some want. And we can debate, you know, from now until the end of time, the term abolish the police and whether that is an effective mantra to describe what people are saying in terms of a different way of public safety or not. But I think it is important to recognize that however you term it, there are people rising up and saying policing as an arm that is seen as an armed, occupying army is not the way to public safety. At the same time, in communities which are impacted by crime and gun violence, there and also mental health crises, we have to find new and different ways of addressing these serious issues that we face in our society. And also, how do we use public monies? How do we divide the pot? And where do we put our resources in terms of public safety, in terms of education, in terms of infrastructure? Those are all things that, for this past year at least, it was an opening, and that opening may have closed or is closing now to do something radical, revolutionary, and to alter the way in which we imagine and construct our society. You're listening to
More Talk Radio on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, 104.3 FM in the Willamette River Valley, Philomath, Oregon, and www.kboo.fm everywhere else. And I want to encourage people to call in and discuss. I know this is not the most happy subject, but that doesn't make it any less real. It doesn't make it any less real, and it's very real for people of color in this experience. And if we're going to get past this, we need to have a conversation. Now, it sounds like somebody's trying to get in by Morse code.
That's Francis is on the line.
Okay, cool. We'll start a conversation. Good morning, Francis.
Good morning. May 12th also is another anniversary of the execution of one of my son's childhood friends, Keaton Otis, by the Portland Police Department. Ms. Randall's words, very poignant words, were right on to me. It's also May 10th is the second year anniversary of the killing of Ronald Green in Louisiana, and the cover-up for that was horrendous. I think what concerns me the most is that these officers seem to think that what they're doing is fine. The total disregard for other people's humanity is frightening to me. I'm not sure, and the fact that all this is covered up and the official reports are always leaving out a lot of information and oftentimes false. I don't know. I remember a friend took me to see Rosewood, and I had to excuse myself and walk out when I saw what was about to happen. I didn't want to see it. I don't think people realize, you know, they talk about hypertension among women, particularly black women, and I don't think people realize how much stress causes hypertension. And I can just imagine, you know, just imagine every day your child going out the door hoping and praying that they have the wherewithal and actually the ability to be wiser than authority figures that they may encounter in order for them to survive. And I'm tired of it too, and I've only shared this experience since I married my husband over 50 years ago, and I frankly have had the privilege of being white and really don't deserve to be as tired as a lot of people are. But I don't like the fact that our children continue to have to deal with this, that they even have to acknowledge its existence. I remember President Obama wrote in his first book, Dreams of My Father. He talked about when black children, when he lost his, he called it their innocence, when he lost his. And why do they have to go through that experience still today? Why do these officers think it's okay to do what they do? And why is it always the victim's responsibility to prove that they were worthy of surviving? And they always find ways to find they had cocaine in their system, like Ronald Green. That's what they're talking about now. He had cocaine and alcohol in his system. So what? A lot of people do. A lot of white people do every day. walking around with that stuff in their system. So that's not a reason to kill somebody.
No, it isn't. Or to be killed.
Exactly. That's not a justifiable reason to kill them. I'm concerned right now because the same thing is happening, it seems, as did in the 90s, when there's been a lot of shootings in the city. And now, of course, I just saw a piece in the news last night where the police are saying the reason that's happening is because we're cutting back on the police. And to use that as a justification to allow them to that makes me wonder who's perpetrating what, actually. And I know people in Chicago are thinking the same thing a lot of times by all these unknown shooters. I think Congresswoman Barbara Lee, I've mentioned this before, she brought a bill last year, a couple years ago, actually, to form a Truth and Reconciliation Commission in the United States of America, something that we've never done and we need to do. If we're ever going to get past any of this, the truth needs to be told straight out for everybody to see, and people, whomever they are, however they've been oppressed, need to have a voice and be able to speak about that oppression. And we need to figure out a way to reconcile all of it.
That's true. The frightening thing, though, Frances, is this. We so need to have a prolonged episode of Truth and Reconciliation. But this country is too selfish to do it.
This country wants its TV shows.
It wants its designer handbags and shoes. It wants its fancy software. It wants
It has media that wants to exploit conflict, no matter what it is.
That too. I listen
to the media
and
they talk about a quote unquote fight among Democrats. Where is the fight? What fight are they talking about? Where is this conflict? Why are we always perpetrating conflict everywhere? Conflict.
But the media doesn't create the conflict, though. The media just exploits it. But the conflict is already there. And the conflict is because we want our lifestyle. We want the primacy that America has in the world. I have a friend visiting who was in the military and has been living for the past few years in the Philippines. And he's come over, and we talked yesterday just about basic stuff. And, you know, he's just aghast at how many changes we have, you know, that are not positive, and how this country just runs everything, you know, to the ground for the sake of getting one less drop of essence out of the turnip, out of the rock. You know, we just want all of that. We want it all as a nation, and
the corporations,
we're not
going to
have
it.
But it's not just the corporations. It's not just America. You know, it's this supremacist mindset of human beings, the species. You know, and I can say that, and we can say that every day, all day long. Well, it's not just here in the United States. Think about Great Britain.
We learned
Great Britain.
Right. I know. But we learn to be hateful. We learn to be mean. We learn to be greedy. We learn to be evil to each other. And that's not something that young people initially express in their lives. It's not something that children express initially.
It's not innately egoistic to be that way. Maybe not evil, but it is innate for children to be greedy and selfish. But I do hear what you're saying. We don't take time to exercise the goodness that we do have in us. We don't use it enough. Yeah.
A young Palestinian girl, I think she's like 10 years old, was, you know, experienced the bombings that just recently went on, and she said she's scared, but she said, I'm only 10 years old. Why is this going on? Why are we doing, why? To her, it was just absurd that it's even happening. Because this is 2021, and the only way that these grown people can resolve whatever conflict they have is to drop bombs on children. Excuse me? That's absurd. But you know who's making bank off of that? The people who sell those war machines to Israel. So let's get real. We need truth and reconciliation. And a legitimate
one. We need
it.
We need to push for it. Yes.
Not some fabricated, made up conspiracy that the Trumpsters run, but tells the dang truth about what's real and what's been going on. And if somebody is too afraid of a man in his car trying to back up out of your way to where you get to kill him, shoot him in the back of the head, then you should not be a police officer if you're that scary. And also, if someone, people always say, well, they're only human, they make mistakes. That's right, they're only human and they make mistakes, so maybe they shouldn't have that much authority over another human being's freedom and their life.
That's true.
Let me suggest, Francis, to...
You guys take...
Let me suggest, Francis, on what you said in terms of your final comments about policing, two things of actions that you should be aware of, two things that are happening. Nationally, the House of Representatives passed the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act of 2020. This bill addresses a wide range of policies and issues regarding policing and law enforcement accountability. It is increases accountability for law enforcement misconduct, restrict the use of certain policing practices, enhances transparency and data collection, and establishes best practices and training requirements. This bill goes a long way in establishing a national registry for national police misconduct registry, and has also limit qualified immunity as a defense to liability and private civil actions against a law enforcement officer. This bill has been passed by the House of Representatives. It is sitting in the U.S. House, U.S. Senate, I mean, and it is what we can do is continue to call and urge the senators to pass that legislation. Locally here in Portland, right now the city of Portland is in negotiation with the Portland Police Union for their contract. I would urge people to listen to those contract negotiations and continue to push for transparency and in every community seek the elimination of qualified immunity that law enforcement officers have, which prevent personal civil action prevents the public to sue individual police officers. Those are some of the changes that we can continue to work for that our caller was urging in terms of transformation as we continue to work for Truth and Reconciliation Commission. There are some meaningful legislation that we can work for in the interim. Thank you so much, Francis, for calling and sharing your thoughts and wisdom with us this morning. you are listening to More Talk Radio with the magnificent Celeste Carey, and I am Cecil Prescott.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, I'll take that on a Monday.
Okay.
I'll take that on a Monday.
We're talking about what? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, any day. Magnificent. Affirm it. Live into it.
Okay.
We're talking this morning about 1 year of the racial justice reckoning that's been happening in this nation since the murder of Mr. George Floyd in Minneapolis. And what has happened? What do you think has happened? How have you changed? How are we different this May than we were 1 year ago? What are things that are happening? What gives you signs of encouragement? And where do you continue to work for change?
Okay, we're getting the ringing again.
231-8187. Yes, I thought it was just my ear.
No, it's not. I hear it too.
We've got Judy on the line.
Cold at first. Good morning, Judy.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm wanting folks to join me in going to Portland Cop Watch webpage and asking to be on the email list for updates on the Portland police contract and police policy at the city level and state level, and to look at the for Pacific Northwest Family Circle and the website for Critical Resistance. I also am wanting people to join me in emailing and calling the Portland City Council members and Mayor's Office, asking them to have pie charts. Budgeting, are you kind of like, okay, these are all the things you spend money on, what are the priorities? And put in all the things they're spending on the police, as well as all the lawyers and lawsuits, as a result of police criminality and violence. And then also have budgeting by grid values, where you would have in the columns human health and civil rights, climate resilience, police accountability, social, racial, gender justice, regenerative economy. And then on the left, when you have all the things that they want to make decisions on, rate it 0 to 10 or 0 to 5 on how much does this expenditure meet the professed values and priorities of the city. Recently, the city of Portland council members and mayor unanimously voted to pay $20 million on top of what they were already paying to one corporation, I think it's, to manage two golf courses in Portland. After the Portland has already had a contract, was already paying them for this, was already paying for the land, was already paying for the water and the pesticides and the fertilizers and the equipment and the yard crew and the parks department and all these other things. And that $20 million could have, And taxpayers are not even allowed to go on the golf course lands without paying more money, when that money could have been spent to increase the showers and bathrooms to be a housing for people who are unhoused, community gardens, environmental restoration, and open parks for all people, and permanent housing, and stopping the use of all the chemicals that are causing diseases with people and destroying our wildlife. So we could have spent that money doing what they say matters instead of something that's outrageous. And if we require transparency in pie chart budgeting, and we require with each vote, each decision on budgets, that you be able to justify, you know, on a rating, how does this fit where you're saying you want to be fossil fuel independent and have a just transition to sustainable, locally developed energy for local human justice.
Okay.
Have them prove that, because by the time we have our fall budget bump and they make adjustments, they will have already committed so much money for other things and will have less money. And they just cleared a budget gap where they're authorized to pay, I think it was over $64 million. I'm not sure the exact amount, for the police retirement and disability fund. If we allow police to be paid more money to violate human rights and do property damage and violence against Portlanders, that extra, if we pay them 1.5 to 2 times amount at protest to go against one political side and not another, then they can retire with that outrageous amount of money that they've done a lot of harm to people. So don't allow them to pay police more for different policing where they have a war zone mentality. And then we don't have such a big gap. And don't pay them disability to disabled Portlanders. And don't let them get away with having
so
many people in Portland not pay their taxes.
Okay, we're gonna have to cut you short now. It's not that what you're saying isn't important, but we're running out of time. Cecil, you were saying something.
I was just thanking the caller for calling and for being so aware and urging all of us to be aware of how our public dollars are used and not be intimidated by the process. Those are critical questions we can ask about public service, how city government and county government works, and not be intimidated by the process. And one thing I gained from what the caller was saying is how important it is to be aware of what is happening, and also how not easy, but how, if someone is interested, how one can get the facts. So go to the website she suggested, Portland Cop Watch, and see how you can become a more informed citizen. This is the 1 year since the death of Mr. George Floyd, and it is an opportunity, as our callers reminded us, for us not only to reflect about who we are as a society, but what we can do to make a society more into a place where we can feel comfortable and safe, and one where people can build community, where racial equity is a reality and not a hope, where policing is transformed so that public safety, community safety is uppermost, and where all people can live safe and healthy lives. What we must do, it is how we honor our ancestors, and as the 106 and 107 year old survivors of the Tulsa race massacre reminded us. It's a long struggle, but we must keep on pressing on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to thank the people who have supported KBLO Radio for this opportunity to have this discussion. Yes, as I said, it is not a happy, bright, sunshiny topic, but it is based in reality, and it's based in a reality that many of us have to negotiate on a daily basis. And thank you to those people who have supported KBLO to give voice and platform to topics, while difficult to address, still need to be addressed because they arise out of human society. We want to stay connected as human beings, though, and we appreciate the opportunities to share music and culture and art and other narratives, other stories, other issues. You bring us together by supporting KBOO Community Radio. So stay in the fold, stay at the table, and stay listening. And thank you so much. This has been More Talk Radio with Cecil and myself, Celeste.
And
we'll be gone next week for the holiday.
for the holiday. Today is Bob Dylan's 80th birthday, and the times, they all are changing.
Yes, they are. We'll catch you week after next. Take care.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will, or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KBOO